Joe Biden and Donald Trump brought it to the stage.
What this debate is going to be remembered for is not that Donald Trump made all these inaccurate statements, but that Joe Biden looked and sounded so bad.
Plus, a very important group is kept out of discussions on Afghanistan's future.
To bring the Taliban to the gathering of special envoys on Afghanistan beginning Sunday in Doha, the UN agreed not to invite women and human rights activists.
And later, an update from Kyiv, the latest from Kenya, and a failed missile launch in North Korea. Today is Friday, June 28th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. In Atlanta on Thursday night, President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump had their first debate of this presidential election cycle. VOA's Calla Yu is in Atlanta and has this report.
Joe Biden and Donald Trump each made their case to voters for why they should be the next president. On the campaign trail, Trump says the U.S. economy is in ruins. At the Atlanta debate hosted by CNN, Trump said America is, quote, a seriously failing nation. He said Biden has done a poor job. Inflation is killing our country. It is absolutely killing us. On the campaign trail, Biden says he has turned around the poor economy he inherited from Trump. At the Atlanta debate, Biden said there is more to do on the economy. Biden said his administration is working to bring down the price around the kitchen table, and that's what we're going to get done. Public opinion polling shows this is a close race, with the economy and immigration top issues for voters. At the debate, Trump says Biden has failed to protect Americans from illegal immigrants who are taking jobs. Trump said the United States has a border that's the most dangerous place anywhere in the world, considered the most dangerous place anywhere in the world, and he opened it up, and these killers are coming into our country, and they're raping and killing women. At the debate, Biden reminded voters about the Trump administration's family separation policy for immigrants. Biden said when Trump was president, he was separating babies from their mothers, put them in cages, making sure their families were separated. On the war in Ukraine, Trump said Russian President Vladimir Putin would never have invaded Ukraine if he had been president. Trump said he will have the war settled between Putin and Zelensky as president-elect. Before I take office on January 20th, I'll have that war settled. Biden said Trump's lack of support for U.S. allies emboldens Russia and threatens a wider war in Europe. Biden said Putin wants all of Ukraine. That's what he wants. And then you think he'll stop there. Do you think he'll stop? When? If he takes Ukraine? What do you think happens to Poland, Belarus?
This was the earliest presidential debate in U.S. history, with neither Trump nor Biden officially nominated as his party's candidate. They each have 75 days to convince the voters to choose them before their next debate in September. Calla Yu, VOA News, Atlanta.
As we've heard, Joe Biden and Donald Trump squared off in their first debate of the 2024 election season Thursday night. In it, Donald Trump was aggressive, confident, and often untruthful. Joe Biden was soft-spoken and seemed tired. His performance has many Democrats worried. For more, I spoke with VOA's chief national correspondent, Steve Herman.
I think my initial thoughts are similar to just about everyone who was watching, which is Donald Trump, despite a long list of inaccurate statements, came across as the victor in the debate because Joe Biden looked and sounded terrible, frankly. And yes, Biden did get in a few good jabs, maybe landed a few punches, but Joe Biden is apparently the only guy who thinks he did a great job. After the debate, he went to a Waffle House in Atlanta after midnight and was asked by some pool reporters how he thought he did. And he said he thought he did well, and it was tough to debate against a liar. And at that point, Joe Biden looked and sounded fine, a very stark contrast to how he looked and sounded just a couple of hours ago. And during these debates, there's a split screen. So you can see the reaction of the other candidate while the other is talking. And in those reactions, Joe Biden looked very disengaged, had concerning facial expressions, and there was immediate panic, I would say, within the first 15 minutes of that debate among Biden aides, among members of Congress, Democratic Party members of Congress, suggesting that perhaps Joe Biden should not be the nominee in November for the Democratic Party.
So clearly not a successful day for Biden on the optics, on the way he looked, on the way he sounded. What about the things he said? Was he correct? Was he right? Did he challenge Trump on the facts when Trump veered away from them?
He did several times, as I said. You know, perhaps he landed a few good punches, but he certainly lost this fight decisively. Trump, to some degree, was unchallenged on a number of misstatements he made. He said Democratic-led states allow babies to be executed after birth, that there were no terror attacks during his presidency, that Iran didn't fund terror groups during his presidency, that Biden for years referred to black people as super predators, that every legal scholar and everybody in general wanted that landmark abortion case Roe v. Wade overturned. These were all untrue. So if we're tallying up the misstatements, the inaccuracies that were made by one candidate or the other, Donald Trump overwhelmingly had the largest pile in that regard. But what this debate is going to be remembered for is not that Donald Trump made all these inaccurate statements, but that Joe Biden looked and sounded so bad.
Which is particularly concerning for the Biden campaign. One, Biden's age is one of the, and his mental acuity are the main issues they're trying to push back against.
Yes. I've been in the room, Steve, many, many times with Joe Biden. I have never seen him looking so disoriented and sounding so badly. Now, the White House said to some reporters during the debate, when White House reporters were immediately calling White House press officials saying, what the heck is up with Joe Biden? They said he had a cold, but he had tested negatively for COVID. That's not exactly reassuring. And the big question right now, and this is what we're going to see in the next day or two, I think it's a very critical time for Democrats to have what is going to be a very public and somewhat disappointing discussion about whether there should be pressure on Joe Biden to step aside. Now, some think that that has to happen. Others are saying, look, you know, there have been a lot of candidates that have done poorly in their first debate and have gone on to win the presidency, and this will blow over. By November, it won't be a factor anymore. I don't think we can say one way or the other at this point whether that's true, but the next few days are going to be absolutely critical.
You mentioned you've been in the room several times with Joe Biden, and this was the worst you've seen him. You've also been in the room several times with Donald Trump. How did his performance measure up to past performances?
Well, Donald Trump also had some moments where he was speaking in non sequiturs and what he said wasn't making a lot of sense. But Donald Trump speaks rapidly. He comes off to a lot of people as speaking convincingly. And he was very much in that pattern last night. Donald Trump just needed to restrain himself to some degree, not lose his temper. I think because there was no audience in the room at this debate in Atlanta, that helped temper Trump to some degree. Also, CNN, the host for this debate, had the ability to cut off the microphones if they went over their time limit. So Donald Trump, compared to some of his rallies, came off as quite restrained. but he did repeatedly call Joe Biden the worst president in America, and definitely with the split screen and Biden looking like he was lost and not coming back, except for a couple of exceptions, attacking Donald Trump when he made these provocative statements, really did not have a very good night.
My last question for you, and we're going to circle back to the possibility of Joe Biden withdrawing, as some pundits are saying he should. How would that work legally? A new candidate wouldn't be on the ballot in certain states.
It's a great question because the clock is ticking. 40 days away, we have this deadline in Ohio, which is one of the swing states that the party's candidates have to be determined. The date is August 7th, and the Democratic National Committee has already decided to upend the traditional convention roll call to ensure that their candidate is on the ballot there, and that's before the actual Democratic Party convention. So, first and foremost, Joe Biden would have to voluntarily withdraw. And then there would have to be a consensus, even before the convention, who to put on on the ballot. And then we would have a so-called open convention, which we've not had for the Democrats since 1968. Ironically, it was in the same city as it's going to be this year, Chicago. And that did not turn out so well for the Democrats because the Republican Richard Nixon won.
VOA's chief national correspondent, Steve Herman. Steve, thanks for your analysis today. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
The war in Ukraine was one of several topics discussed at the presidential debate, and it's one with the most international consequences for the president, whoever it is. Tatiana Voroshko is the managing editor of VOA's Ukrainian service. She looks at how the two candidates differ in their approach.
Joe Biden and Donald Trump both agree on the need to end the war in Ukraine, though foreign policy experts say Trump has been less specific about how to make that happen between Russian leader Vladimir Putin and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Sergey Kudelya is an associate professor of political science at Baylor University.
He advocated only for the need to start some types of talks or negotiations, and he said that he would be willing to engage in these negotiations between Putin and Zelensky. But he never expressed any or specified any of the designs or the future outline of this peace agreement.
In this year's congressional fight to pass Ukraine aid, Trump said that assistance should be loans and not grants.
We're looking at it right now, and they're talking about it, and we're thinking about making it in the form of a loan instead of just a gift. We keep handing out gifts of billions and billions of dollars.
Trump says Europe should pay a greater share of helping Ukraine. But if reelected, Trump will not want to be seen as having lost that war, says former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, John Herbst.
We do know that Trump perceives himself as a strong man, does not want to be associated with foreign policy failure. And a Russian victory in Ukraine, if Trump is president, would look very much like a foreign policy failure.
Trump's Republican Party is split over Ukraine, with some leaders viewing the war as a major U.S. security threat, and others saying it is a costly distraction. As President, Biden leads the international coalition coordinating military assistance to Ukraine with more than $175 billion in U.S. aid. He says America will stand against unjust and unprovoked aggression for as long as it takes.
If the United States walks away, it will put Ukraine at risk. Europe is at risk. The free world will be at risk, emboldening others to do what they wish to do us harm.
Biden has partially removed restrictions on Ukraine using U.S. weapons against military targets in Russia. That commitment means the policy of a second Biden term would likely mirror the first, with greater latitude for increasing economic pressure on Russia, says Catholic University of America professor Michael Kimmage.
It's not as if they're determining their foreign policy on the basis of the election in some crude fashion, but there are limits and constraints, and those would be very different in a second term where, you know, Biden can no longer run for re-election in 2028, and so he would be quite a bit freer.
The candidates' differences over Ukraine reflect their differing approaches to Russia, with Trump looking to improve ties with Moscow and Biden continuing to isolate Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. Tatiana Voroshko, VOA News, Washington.
Meanwhile, in Kyiv, it's Constitution Day. The Russians continue shelling in Kharkiv, and Ukraine damages a space communications facility in Crimea. But all eyes in Ukraine were on the U.S. presidential debate. VOA correspondent Anna Chernikova has the details from Kyiv.
Late Thursday, the Russian army hit Kharkiv with two Fab 500 aerial bombs for the first time. These bombs are twice as powerful as those that Russian forces used earlier to hit the city. As a result of the attack, three private houses, the premises of the university, and the state emergency service branch were damaged. Four people were reported injured. Also on Thursday, Russian troops conducted shelling of the city of Kurakhove in the Donetsk region. As a result, two people were killed and two more were injured, local authorities reported. The extent of the destruction is still being clarified. On Friday, the Ukrainian Defense Ministry said the Ukrainian military destroyed the Russian Space Communication Center in Moscow-occupied Crimea in an attack earlier this week. In a statement on Telegram, the ministry described the target as a valuable military component in satellite communication and navigation system for Russian troops. It is unclear what impact this will have on Russian military operations in the area. Meanwhile, the main focus of attention in Ukraine was on the U.S. presidential debate between current President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump. Ukrainians have high expectations from the November U.S. elections, as many in the country believe that the winner will be acting more resolute towards supporting Ukraine and providing more aid faster. Ukrainian experts believe the main hope for Ukrainians is to not get betrayed by their allies. The debates did not provide Ukraine with any precise answer to the question of how to end the war with Russia and what could be done to convince Putin to sit down for negotiations. Neither of the candidates made it clear. However, many Ukrainians were concerned with the way Joe Biden presented himself and the state of his health. Many experts mentioned that Trump used less truthful and strong facts in his speech, but the way he did the talking was much more confident and lively. Ukrainian society is divided in its support of either Biden or Trump, while many have fears Biden's physical weaknesses could become a political one, while Trump is too unpredictable. On June 28, Ukraine marks one of its most important state holidays, Constitution Day.
Перше слово першої статті нашої Конституції – Україна. Із перших хвилин війни мільйони людей довели, що...
President Volodymyr Zelensky addressed the nation saying that the first word in the first article of the Ukrainian Constitution is Ukraine, and that from the first minutes of the Russia-Ukraine war, millions of people proved that for them Ukraine comes first. He reminded that the 17th article of the Constitution says the protection of Ukraine is the most important function of the state and the cause of the entire Ukrainian nation. He said that millions of Ukrainians prove their devotion to this statement every day, both those on the front lines and those who work hard to strengthen the state's economy. The Ukrainian Constitution was adopted and ratified on June 28, 1996, the Constitution as the foundation Ukrainian law. All other laws and other normative legal acts of Ukraine must conform to the Constitution. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. On Friday, South Korea's military released a video that it said showed a North Korean missile spiraling abnormally early in flight and exploding. It was a rare publication of surveillance footage to dismiss Pyongyang's claim of a successful test. North Korean state media had said that Pyongyang successfully conducted an important missile test on Wednesday, aimed at developing missiles able to deploy multiple warheads. The launch was filmed by a thermal observation device using South Korean frontline units, and it showed a projectile spiraling out of control. South Korean military assessed that instability during flight led to the missile's explosion, calling the North's claims of success as deception and exaggeration to cover up the failure. A two-day United Nations-led international conference on Afghanistan is set to begin Sunday in Doha. However, to get the Taliban to participate after they skipped the talks in February, the UN decided not to have any women and rights activists at the table this time, a move that angered many. VOA's Pakistan bureau chief Sarah Zaman reports on the conference agenda and what some see as the necessity of having the Taliban there.
Since the Taliban took control of Afghanistan almost 3 years ago, women have largely been erased from public life. An Afghan woman, who requested to be identified only as Maryam for security reasons, is among the thousands affected by the Taliban's ban on women's education. She says she was in Kabul University to apply for admission in a Master of Arts program when she heard the administration would not give her a form. She was really upset and thought she had lost her dreams. Now Afghan women will be missing from the third UN-led discussion that aims to explore engagement with Afghanistan to bring the Taliban to the gathering of special envoys on Afghanistan beginning Sunday in Doha. The UN agreed not to invite women and human rights activists. Mehbooba Siraj is a prominent Afghan activist.
We don't have a voice. We are not present. They don't want us. The world decides again in our absence. This is too much.
Several Afghan activists are calling for a boycott of the conference. The global rights defenders fear could legitimize the Taliban's ultra-conservative rule. Rosa Otenbayeva, the head of United Nations Assistance Mission to Afghanistan, rejects the concern.
It cannot be repeated enough that this sort of engagement is not legitimization or normalization.
Still, the Taliban see this as a diplomatic win. Pakistan's Special Representative for Afghanistan, Asif Durrani, says having the Taliban at the table is a necessity.
So, Taliban are our reality. They have brought peace in the country. I'm not saying this. It is internationally acknowledged fact. So what to do about that?
Instead of top diplomats, Taliban spokesperson Zabiullah Mujahid will lead the delegation from Kabul. Talks will focus on private business development, financial and banking sector issues, and alternate livelihoods for farmers affected by the Taliban's ban on opium poppy cultivation.
If these talks don't go with the Taliban, Afghanistan is going to go into isolation. When Afghanistan goes into isolation completely by the world, it's going to be absolutely terrible.
Otunbayeva has said the international community will push the Taliban on women's rights at the conference and meet activists afterwards. Sara Zaman, VOA News, Islamabad.
Iranians voted Friday for a new president following the death of Ebrahim Raisi in a helicopter crash. The voters are choosing from a tightly controlled group of four candidates loyal to the supreme leader at a time of growing public frustration and Western pressure. The election coincides with escalating regional tension because of the war between Israel and Iran's allies, Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon, as well as increased Western pressure on Iran over its fast-advancing nuclear program.
گسترش روابط دیپلماتیک با کشور مصر می‌تونیم یه هژمون منطقه‌ای به وجود بیاریم.
That's voter Sheila Tuimuri Mehr. She said she's expecting the next president to improve Iran's standing in the world while ensuring freedom for all people in the country. While the election is unlikely to bring a major shift in the Islamic Republic's policies, its outcome could influence the succession to Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, Iran's 85-year-old supreme leader in power since 1989. And that's going to wrap it up for us today. There's more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until next week, I'm Steve Karish.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with the 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.